I slowly shook my head back and forth, as though I had just witnessed someone commit a felony. My inclination towards rules was wholly supported by the legalistic private Christian school I attended through middle school, along with the youth group and Bible camps I attended. Thanks to these fear-inducing Bible-thumping Christians, I prayed for salvation 15 times throughout elementary school. 13 times were the equivalent to begging Mr. Moneybanks to let me out of jail. One time, because I wasn't paying attention when the camp counselor asked me if I had been saved, so he proceeded to guide me through the sinner's prayer. And one time, somewhere in there, I hope, was counted as the real deal. The culture fueled my lens, the lens through which I looked at the world, which was a long list of do nots. Do not get C's in school. Do not be lousy at sports. Do not be reckless with money. Do not sing worship songs that evoke hedonism. Do not be a lazy Christian. Do not be a father like your father. Do not draw attention to yourself. Do not let anyone know you are not a conservative. In one way or another, I failed at all of these things. And I was a high anxiety child, and I had the wet bed sheets back home to prove it. In high school, I grew my hair out as a form of rebellion to the system. Otherwise, I continued to be the teacher's pet, just as I'd always been, and I listened to my mother vent to me about the failing marriage for hours at a time. As I went through my teenage years, I tried to figure out who I was, as most teenagers do. For a few years, I questioned if I might be gay. I wasn't attracted to men, but I didn't fit the stereotype of a regular macho guy. It didn't help every time a gay guy would interject, "How the heck are you not gay?" I would listen to other people joke about things about themselves that I could never admit myself. I frequently felt ashamed of myself. This had been the single most difficult thing for me, showing myself grace. All through my life, I've held myself to unreasonably high standards that I could never keep. A roommate in college once told me that if he had one wish, it would be that I wouldn't be so hard on myself. What he didn't know is that sometime since mid-high school, I'd been battling depression. Classmates would tell me I acted like a 40-year-old, which I accepted, because I didn't want to tell them what I was really dealing with and be a subject to their pity. I didn't want to be a burden on anyone. My depression got so bad that I thought about suicide almost on a monthly basis. I always concealed this, which caused me to become numb. I watched my life from a third-person perspective. This might be slightly graphic, be warned. One time, I walked into the bathroom, and I saw a projection of my bloody corpse curled up in the shower, where I would have prevented too big of a mess for others to clean up. This and other instances haunted me, and I would never speak of them because I was afraid people would overreact or react at all. I would rather listen than speak anyways. It didn't help that at churches I attended, the pastor would preach that not forgiving yourself was a sin. I would think, of all the problems people struggle with, you choose to single out those who are hard on themselves and say that that in itself is a sin. Now they are beating themselves up over two things. Public accusation does not compel internal compassion. Thankfully, I could still listen to the sermons from my church back home online. One in particular was on my mind that semester. It focused on how we think about ourselves and how we think to ourselves, being children of Christ. Shortly after my roommate had told me about his one wish for me, I did one of the hardest things I had ever done. I asked a girl out on a date. So, obviously this was not the best point of my life for that kind of relationship, and although she did agree to go on the date, I can safely say it was just short of a catastrophe. After the terrible date was over, I went back home to an empty apartment where I sat on my bed as I felt all the pressure I had put on myself bubbling up. The words of my roommate and the message of my pastor's sermon echoed in my mind. I prayed out loud as I turned to despair. I needed to hear myself confront this out loud. I was so tired of pretending to be a strong person. I just wanted to legitimately be emotionally strong. As I began to weep, repeating, "Be proud of yourself. Be proud of yourself." I told God I wanted his comfort, but I wasn't finding any, as my mind so easily slips back into self-criticism. Immediately after saying this, one of my friends called me to tell me how much he admired me for going so far out of my comfort zone. And this made me feel like God was sitting right by my side with his arms around me, not saying anything, just letting me heal. I believe it was at this point that I began to learn to show myself compassion and grace. Because you can't heal from something you are actively trying to control. You have to submit to your pain and accept that you need healing, not avoidance. The first 3 years after graduation from college, I lived out of hotels for my work across North Dakota. I would frequently work 80 to 100 hours a week, 7 days a week. My manager would usually call me on a day's notice or less to pack up and move to another hotel several hours away to start on a new project. Needless to say, I kind of felt like a lonely cowboy without a home and completely out of touch with everyone I cared about. I drove home in 2012 for a few days, and a friend, Josiah, invited me to come to his church. During the greeting, everyone it was in the aisle hugging each other and hugging me. I was blown away by how natural the sense of community was presented and how readily I was incorporated into this family. I knew that if I ever made it back to the Twin Cities, this would be the church I would go to. I've never had such an immediate positive reaction to a church I was visiting. Okay. In the winter of 2012 to 2013, I requested to be laid off for the season. I spent much of my time alone in my apartment in Fargo while I struggled with the unemployment office trying to collect my unemployment checks. I made a list of things to do, like wake up before 3 p.m., dig your car out of the snow, go to the gym, just so I would stay sane. I also planned a trip to ride my bicycle down the coast of California to escape the cold and challenge myself. But the night before I flew out, I was feeling especially lonely and in despair of the prospect of spending the rest of my life this way, completely cut off from everyone. So I asked God that if I was going to grow old and never experience love, if I was going to spend the rest of my life alone like this at this point, I'd rather die from being hit by a car or falling off a cliff. Cars kill cyclists all the time, so the possibility wasn't much of a stretch. As I thought about this, I decided I would at least leave a will and a note to some of the people that were closest to me. So I made a list of people that I would want this letter to go to, and I started writing, expressing my gratitude and love for them. And as I began writing this, the heavy weight of yearning for connection rushed back over me and drenched the paper in tears. It was very clear at that point that there was nothing more I wanted than to embrace each one of them and tell them how much I love them. Well, I'm happy to report to you that I survived my trip unscathed. It actually turned out to be a pretty nice distraction from my ice cave, and I met many interesting people along the way, from the homeless to the highly successful. A few months after returning from California, I met Nicole online, and as our relationship grew, it increased my leverage power to get a promotion and transfer to Minneapolis. I immediately came back to Church of All Nations, to a community I loved. This is one of the few, if not only, churches I have found that has created a safe environment to openly practice vulnerability, true humility, and teeth-gnashing honesty. I certainly wouldn't be giving this version of my testimony at other churches I've attended. As you have witnessed my baptism 2 weeks ago, it had been a decision I made many years ago to wait until I found a church I could call home, a place I wasn't just passing through. I wanted a baptism that was not just memorable to myself, but also to the people I was living in community with. I'm a broken human being, just like everyone else. I certainly haven't arrived as a Christian, because we're all on a journey through and out of our brokenness. Brothers and sisters, I want you to know that I love you for who you are, and thank you for loving me.